How will you manage money in the future? Could a chatbot become your next financial advisor?
This week, we'll be sharing a fascinating conversation with Akin Soysauer from BCGX. With Gen Z investing earlier than ever and AI reshaping how people access financial advice, this episode is even more relevant now than when we first released it.
Enjoy the episode.
There's a huge say and do gap. Like, people will tell you all sorts of things when they talk about money, but they will do sometimes the complete opposite. It's super emotional as a topic.
That's Akin Soysauer, a global expert on digital investing who's part of the BCGX leadership team in Europe and the Middle East.
Akin is passionate about democratizing the world of finance. That means one, making financial markets easier to understand, two, lowering barriers to wealth management, and three, giving more people the tools they need to optimize their savings.
In Annika's conversation with Akin, we explore the growing popularity of retail investing. It's where individual investors buy and sell stocks on their own rather than relying on financial institutions to invest for them. We also discuss how generative AI is disrupting the wealth management industry by providing investment advice to the masses. We also touch on how everybody's favorite topic, regulation, has actually made it more difficult for some people to access financial knowledge.
Enjoy our conversation with Akin.
At FinTech Files, we usually like to break down these complex financial topics for our audiences. So how would you explain the concept of wealth management to your grandma?
Well, at the core, wealth or wealth management is about taking care of your money so that it can take care of you in the future. Imagine you have a garden, you plant seeds, and then they will grow into strong, healthy plants. And you need to make sure they're protected against weeds and pests. And wealth management is like gardening. Yeah, so it will help you grow your plants basically through smart investments and making sure they're protected and nurtured and so on, so that you and your loved ones are provided for down the line. So that's how I'd probably explain it to my grandma.
I think in this way, also my grandma would understand it. Perfect. So Akin, can you please share a bit of how you came to focus on wealth management? And maybe also elaborate a little bit why are you so passionate about this topic?
Happy to, sure. Look, I started my career at BCG in the midst of the financial crisis in 2008. We all thought the world was going under. No one knew what's going to happen. And then it was a time where lots of wealth managers, private banks, banks in general, they were restructuring, rethinking their wealth businesses. And so there was work in that space and I really, really liked it. Super passionate about the topic of wealth management, investing. I mean, if you look at the way how you invest and manage your money, will decide really more about your life than the job you have. And people are not aware of this. Yeah, it's super emotional as a topic. It's probably the place where there's a huge say and do gap. Like, people will tell you all sorts of things when they talk about money, but they will do sometimes the complete opposite. And researching these nuances is super fascinating to me.
BCG recently published its 23rd annual wealth management report, identifying global trends in the industry and highlighting opportunities for growth. This year's report held some surprises about a shift in wealth distribution.
Every time I opened LinkedIn, I saw our wealth management being quite well promoted. Can you give us a little background on what the wealth management report is?
Sure. Every year, we do calculate how much wealth there is in the world. And then we basically also break it down in regions and segments. And essentially, you can draw conclusions around who got richer and who's got poorer. It's a super comprehensive study. So it has a lot of quantitative elements. So we basically bring together all the data countries are publishing, banks are publishing, and so we can reconstruct a lot around asset classes and how they've developed, as well as, you know, money flows. That's one. But then also, we really explore trends and challenges and opportunities in the industry, you know, talking to experts, and we bring that together into one view. So this year was a lot about Gen AI, as you can imagine. But then also, one finding was also that, I mean, which typically comes out, is that the rich are getting richer. And it wasn't the case last year. So the press loved it last year because the rich were actually getting poorer. And this year was back to normal, so to say. And that got also a lot of attention in the press. Yeah,
I think the income generation tends to be a focus for many people, whereas the wealth management and also the distribution is often overlooked. Why do you think that is the case?
It's a good question. And I alluded to it before, right? So wealth and investing is super impactful and actually more impactful than the income side. But income is tangible and immediate. And, you know, it's what most people think when they think about financial stability. You know, will I make the next year? And so you also see the money coming in. It's something you can count on regularly. Whereas wealth, investing, wealth management is super abstract, right? It's super long term. You need a different mindset. Yeah, you need to think about the future. You need an understanding of compounding, right? What Einstein, I think, called the eighth world wonder. Yeah, so you need to have that and you need to plan for events that seem super far off, yeah, retirement and inheritance. So it's super abstract and I guess it's not in our DNA. And then there's also, and this is another topic, a lack of financial literacy, right? People just don't know and never have been taught. Like in school, we've been taught so much about, I don't know, poems and stuff, but we've never been taught about, you know, how financial markets work. And so I think that's also one of the reasons why people are not really focused on it.
Is this a trend in terms of financial literacy is improving? Because I had the impression, at least in Germany, looking, for instance, at my generation, we're all starting to invest at least in ETFs. We're all starting to take way more care of this because the pension, as we knew it before, and like maybe the generation of my parents has, will not be there for us anymore. I think this might also be one of the trends you saw, correct?
Yes, that's true. Financial literacy is improving, especially with the younger generations. There's not that much data on it, but I'm now actually starting a new study with the World Economic Forum and Robinhood, the platform in the US, to actually investigate this across the globe, yeah, so to see how retail investing is evolving.
Retail investors are individuals who buy and sell stocks themselves. They forego the more traditional route of relying on a financial institution to manage their investment portfolio. User-friendly apps like Robinhood and Webull have made investing more accessible. This has fueled the growth of online communities centered around investment tips. Those online communities in turn make certain stocks go viral. These are meme stocks. The tricky thing is the value of these stocks tend to go through dramatic ups and downs. This makes it difficult for investors and financial institutions to keep up. Sometimes, retail investors coordinate to create these dramatic swings in price. Other times, stocks go viral simply because retail investors think it will help them build wealth. This is all part of an overarching belief among many in Gen Z that they need to save for the future.
There is this trend with Gen Z who are actually super concerned about their retirement. They just believe that the state will take care of you when you're old is gone. And through that, there's this new trend of investing and getting financially literate. But it's still, I think, the thesis holds that most, by and large, people are not financially literate.
The Wealth Management Report also found that high net worth individuals like millionaires are starting to move to different parts of the world and favor certain financial centers.
There's some overarching trends around how wealth is distributed. So what we see is a bit around mobility of high net worth individuals. So we do see an increasing mobility there. So Dubai and Singapore, they're really profiting from an influx of millionaires, so to say, and also Switzerland.
Maybe we can drill down on the movement a bit. So what is the cross-border flow of wealth and how is it then maybe also impacting these financial centers you just mentioned?
Yeah, so there's two things to distinguish. So one is the movement of people. So there's literally high net worth individuals moving their center of life basically to Dubai or to Singapore. And then there's the movement of money. If we stick with the movement of money, that's what we call like cross-border wealth flows. And this is also what the press loves to write about, that these offshore centers have grown and so on. If you look at overall wealth in the world, including everything, we're talking about roughly 500 trillion and cross-border wealth is 13, 15 trillion out of it. So it's a tiny bit actually, yeah, if you look at it. But of course, within for banks and for wealth management, it matters a lot. It's essentially people or high net worth individuals seeking to diversify their assets, yeah, mitigate risks and sometimes take care also of some favorable tax regimes. So they move money across. Yeah. But most of the, so that would be someone living in China or living in and having money in the UAE, in Dubai, or someone lives in, you know, a German or has money in Switzerland. Yeah. So that's what we capture as cross-border flow. And then if the German would move to Switzerland, that we would call basically movement of high net worth individuals themselves.
Having lived in Dubai for quite some while, these were definitely similar observations we had.
Yeah, and Dubai is, they're actually pushing this also. Like they want to establish themselves as a hub for high net worth individuals across the globe. Yeah. So the government is really behind it.
They're definitely doing a good job there. I think it's becoming more and more and more attractive to live there.
Yeah.
The wealth management industry has been facing regulatory pressures for some time. Regulators want to minimize risk for investors and prevent catastrophic market crashes. But some worry that increasing regulations might have the side effect of making it more difficult for people to access financial advice. Akin explains how the financial crisis of 2008 jump-started this dynamic.
So since then, there's been a global push for transparency and accountability in the financial industry, right? So there's a belief that regulators can help protect investors especially. And then there's also this push towards reducing systemic risks in the industry, right? So that we don't see a bank collapse like we saw with Lehman Brothers. And what happens is that increases, of course, the cost of running a bank, of running a wealth manager. And that's what we also see. If you want to advise someone today in most European markets, the hurdle has gone up so much. I mean, you need to record the conversation in most countries. You need to write a report afterwards, right, that you have provided the right advice and so on. And it's become so formalistic that it actually defeats the actual purpose of protecting the investor. It's almost cutting access for a lot of people in certain wealth brackets, yeah, from getting advice because it's become so expensive that we almost in some markets often talk about of this advice gap, right? Especially in the UK, for example, where some wealth plans don't get advice anymore because it becomes so expensive and so cumbersome for banks and providers to do that.
That's then a cool use case for a more digitalized advisor so that you can bring it down to more standardization even for high net worth individuals, correct?
Yes, digital advice or digitally enabled advice is a big topic. However, if you look at the markets, it's still not there yet. The amount of assets with robo-advisors and with digital advisors is tiny compared to larger banks. But there are companies out there. Like, I mean, I worked a lot with Vanguard, for example, and I believe their mission is to democratize access to investing. And they're doing an amazing job out there providing advice and advisory services to the entire wealth spectrum.
Do you feel that the average person has the access to the advice they need to make a decision about their investments?
I mean, theoretically, yes. I mean, you can now see lots of YouTube videos on it and you can get it, but the reality is no, they don't. Yeah. So while there is more information today, yeah, not all of it is easily accessible and tailored to the needs of the average person, right? They won't go on YouTube and searching for these topics. So, and then, as I said, financial advice can be expensive. So that's that. And that creates this advice gap. And the hope is now, of course, that with the advancement in technology, particularly AI, now we see this changing, yeah, so that personal advice can be provided at scale.
So it's then more an at-scale problem because I have the feeling for some subsets, there is like a quite broad range of information available that is also trying to make it easily digestible. So for instance, maybe it's my bubble, but Madame Moneypenny is one of those female influencers yeah. who's trying to make ETFs very accessible to like females without having any prior knowledge here. And her books, I think half of my female friends got them at birthday presents at a certain point of time because it's really trying to make it more accessible. And so far, I think she's making a really good job. And there are also others who really try to make it easily digestible.
True, there is more and more, which is great. However, I'll come back to one of the first points I made. There's a huge say and do gap. So yes, people will say and will read about it and maybe talk about it, but then doing it is a whole other thing. So what we've seen now, right? I've interviewed now thousands of clients in Europe on this, right? And what we always see is they can recite the theory, sometimes even better than us, right? They know about compounding, now they read about it, but they're not using any of it. To bridge that, often the advisor, like the human, does a great job. So you have some person you trust and they will nudge you and say, look, don't panic now, invest a bit more, invest regularly. And they nudge you into investing. And that seems to work much better, at least if I look at the numbers, than the self-directed investing, except for some niches. But by and large, if you look at the general population, they really benefit from talking to a human at the moment when it comes to investing.
That human touch when it comes to wealth management can help steer people in the right direction. But generative AI has undoubtedly had a huge impact on the industry and can be an incredible tool for those who don't have access to a financial advisor. GenAI can help you identify investment milestones to reach your long-term goals, or it can provide projections based on your investment, and it can provide day-to-day financial advice. The question for regulators is, how will they handle these kind of chatbots? Should they allow them to provide personalized financial advice at all?
I think this excites me most coming from like a techie perspective. How are we currently seeing GenAI changing the field of management, wealth management here?
GenAI has a lot of potential in wealth management, right? We should see more personalized and more efficient client interactions, right? So essentially, the AI part should be able to analyze the data and provide tailored investment propositions and advice to clients and at scale. So the whole advice gap should become smaller, in a say. Now, that's the theory, and that's what we also project when we look for 2030. But right now, today, we have conducted now a survey with most wealth managers in the world. Now, a lot of them are still in piloting stage and use case stage. So they're really thinking about where this can help. And there's no one yet who has rolled out this at scale, I would say. But the pilots are super promising. Now, I'm running also some pilots now myself, and the feedback we get from clients and agents using it or the advisors using AI tools is great. Yeah, so they really see the value. And so I believe this will change the industry in the mid-run. Yeah? So we'll see certain changes, especially on scaling advice out to more clients.
Do you also think that GenAI has maybe the potential to democratize investing and also increase the overall accessibility of it?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. There are already offerings out there in terms of investing. So as you said, like you can now buy ETFs quite easily. You can invest in the savings plans. That's already out there. But what GenAI hopefully will do, we'll need to see. But the regulators need to also tag along, yeah, on that ride to scale advice. And if we basically get that out there, so you essentially would be talking to a chatbot or would be talking to an avatar, whatever that it then is in 2030, right? And this thing would advise you on your journey. And I believe that will be the case if the regulators tag along. Yeah? At the moment, it's not possible. So you can't provide financial advice through AI. But in the future, this may change, or at least have parts of the advisory process run by AI, to be more precise.
How do you envision the role of financial advisors in the future?
Self-service will be redefined. So once AI tools, you know, in the industry are more common, we will like and we will do a lot more self-service, investing through chatbot or increasing certain things or, you know, changing certain things will be much easier, and researching and getting the bank's newest research on something that will work much better. Today, most of the time, you need to call your advisor or you need to get in touch with her, with him. That will change, I believe. The other thing which probably will see our AI-driven strategies on the asset management side, so that certain portfolios will be AI-run or at least AI-controlled. So that's definitely also something which may change over time. Also, in terms of, if you look at investing, it's not just the actual investing, right? But the planning around it, estate planning, wealth planning, and for, you know, lower wealth bands, retirement planning, all that will be, I believe, AI supported. And there the regulators also much less intense. Yeah, so there you can do and use AI much more today. Basically, you may have a conversation and say, hey, I'm Annika, X years old, I plan to retire, I don't know, when I'm 55. So here, these are my assets. So what should I do? How should the journey, and so on and so forth, and that you can already do today.
That's really cool. So we already discussed a little bit on the connection of Gen Z trends. Are there some other trends you see in terms of participation and access to information?
I mean, Gen Z is really remarkable at the moment. They are much more financially aware. They're open to discuss investments versus the previous generations. They use a lot of social media, and that helps also in that Reddit and TikTok becoming actually the sources of truth versus banks, which actually can be. That's one of the topics we're gonna look at with the World Economic Forum now. What's the state there? Because that has also some dangers. Yeah, so that's super interesting at the moment. So that's really probably the group which is most into retail investing at the moment. Not in assets, yeah, of course, because they don't have that much money versus, you know, older generation, but in terms of activity and engagement, it's super remarkable. The other thing maybe which we can mention are the passive investors. They have increased, right? The belief that you would trust actively managed funds has gone down. So there's general increase in what we call passive investors who just trust the market.
Coming maybe to some closing thoughts here, what do you envision to be the biggest challenges and disruptions in the wealth management space in the coming years, particularly to the relation of democratizing in finance?
So one, AI will help. I mean, of course, there's a huge acceptance on the client side around it. So that may change, right? I don't know whether in the future we'll all think, oh no, this is AI driven and I don't want this and whatever. So it doesn't look that way at the moment. But that's definitely a thing. And then talent is a big thing. Anyone who deals with AI on the technical side is super rare at the moment, getting that. And then lastly, and this is probably the most interesting challenge, is the regulatory side, right? How do we ensure the control processes within banks keep up? But also the regulators, how do they keep up with this? That's probably one of the biggest challenges of the next 5 to 10 years in the industry.
Let's seem really curious how this will change and looking forward to many more GenAI-enabled solutions here.
Same here.
Thanks a lot for your time, Arkin. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise.
Wow, it was really great to speak to Arkin about how wealth management trends are changing how people access financial advice. There's so much to talk about. But I'm curious, like we talked a lot about AI. I know you are bought Gen AI enthusiast and obviously expert as well, Nora. How has financial advice and all of this been in your life?
I've got a confession to make on this because actually I've never taken professional financial advice from a human being. So I'm probably very much on the AI end here. And I mean, that's partly since I come from a background where I have just never known that there is wealth management as an industry until I got started working in consulting and working in the financial services industry. So that's one thing. And then on the other side, I also personally started investing just when these investment apps came around, when Robinhood and when Trade Republic were launched. So I would say I really do identify with this millennial investment generation. And when it comes to making investment decisions, I feel like I'm a rather skeptical person anyways. And why would I trust a person I don't know with making a better decision for myself than having data at hand that basically shows me that a robo, an algorithm in the background, is making a good decision for myself?
Yeah, I've always think like I've had a similar situation. I think for reasons of like wealth management, it was always at the bank. There was like the fancy building or like the fancy card, and you kind of had to have money to do that.
It felt very
and
distant.
If you didn't
always.
Have, exactly.
Yeah,
it was like something for the old, and it was never just approachable or easy. I think a huge change for the fintech industry for me was also that, and I think crypto was the same, was this notion of I could do it and I could do it even without a border or a financial institution. It was this element of agency that it provided me that I think you see it in like social platforms and other places in technology. They do that very well. Like that's how they get close to the client. And like, I think the financial institution has always had that distance, the distance of like, I'm too broke for wealth management that's not for me. Right? Like nobody will take the time.
Yeah, and they also don't want to provide the transparency. Like that's their IP, how they make investment decisions. So they don't necessarily explain to you why they do what they do, but that's actually not inspiring trust on my end. Whereas on the other side, if I look at an investment management app, a robo-advisor, if it's done well, the user experience is
obviously it's an onboarding to the product, but it's also an educational process. And they ask you all these questions that you need to think about anyways.
Yeah, and I think like when we think about fintech files and we always like diving into the tech, there's so much of the technology that is just stitched together with the purpose, right? With the aim of saying, okay, how do I bring value to people? Like nobody understood stocks and bonds, and like most countries, like private pension plans are breaking, or government public aid or healthcare is just like not reliable.
Absolutely.
So when you think about, you know, wealth, security, safety, your future, the lack of trust and the lack of closeness is just like, it's not even something you should be able to afford to do. It just shows how big the gap is still, I think.
Yeah. And to me, it also opened a whole new world of investment opportunities, because where I grew up, southern Germany, you could say it's a more conservative region. Well, best you can do is buy a house. So that's really the dream investment that everybody...
A nice pension, a good job, and
yeah,
a house.
Yeah, exactly. So having these robo-advisors now attend really makes it easy to offer financial advice to the masses at a very low price point. And that's really, really remarkable. This has been FinTech Files, a podcast from BCG Platinian.
This season, we will deep dive into the groundbreaking ideas shaping the future of fintech. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. What topics would you like us to cover, and who are your dream guests? Drop us a line at any time at fintech-podcast@bcgplatinium.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you so much for listening.